Okay, witches, That Witch Life's third annual mini-con is just around the corner on Saturday, April 6th. Tickets are still available, but they're going fast. This is a virtual conference, and this year we are focusing the entire mini-con on the magic of astrology. Come join us for workshops about using astrology to improve your magic and your life. Hillary, Kanani, and I will be presenting workshops, plus there will be a special class by astrologer Michael A. Bryan and a masterclass with renowned astrologer and author Ivo Dominguez Jr. Topics include empowering your witchcraft with astrology, mastering traditional astrology, astrology for artists, moon magic, and healing with the star goddess. If you can't make it live, everything will be recorded and sent to ticket holders after the event. Get your tickets for the April 6th That Witch Life Minicon, The Magic of Astrology, now at thatwitchlife.com. Get it, witches!
Hey, everybody. I wanted to let you know about a book that's out right now that's called The Witch's Encyclopedia of Magical Plants by Sandra Kynes. It is your ultimate acacia to zinnia guide to over 550 magical plants for rituals, spellcraft, divination, and more. It is an incredible resource for magical practitioners. It's an illustrated encyclopedia that offers detailed profiles of all the herbs, houseplants, fruits, vegetables, trees, and flowers that you could ever need. It is a comprehensive reference guide. It's packed with familiar favorites like apple, lemongrass, with lesser known options like moonwort and pignut. There are hundreds of plants to choose from. You are going to find the best botanical partners for raising your healing energy, communing with your ancestors, increasing your psychic ability, manifesting your dreams, and anything else you could possibly want to do with plants. You can grab your gardening gloves and save 20% on The Witch's Encyclopedia of Magical Plants by Sandra Kynes by going to Llewellyn.com and using coupon code PLANTS20. That is, go to Llewellyn.com, enter coupon code PLANTS20, and you will get 20% off The Witch's Encyclopedia of Magical Plants. That coupon code is valid through March 31st. It's not good in conjunction with other discounts or previously placed orders. You will need to be logged into your Llewellyn.com account for the coupon code to apply. Check it out. It is a great resource for all of our plant lovers, and you will not be sad that you've added this to your collection.
The path of the witch is so unique.
The gift of witchcraft.
I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits.
A very personal relationship between a person and spirit.
Carnal lust and fun things like that.
Working with different energies and spirits and communicating.
Creating magic.
Powerful ritual.
The role of the witch is to make change.
Blessed be, y'all.
Blessed be.
People ask me, like, okay, I'm a witch, and I don't know what to do.
20 years ago, three young friends realized they were witches.
They scattered to different parts of the world, following magic and spirit.
Now, they're back in their hometown to share what they've learned.
Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast, your home for living as a witch in today's world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That Witch Life Podcast. It's just me and one co-host today because Miss Courtney is celebrating a big birthday with her husband. So I am hosting today, and I'm Hillary, and I'm joined by Miss Kanani.
That is right.
Say hello.
Hello.
Hello. And this is going to be a really exciting episode because we are talking with Bree Luna, and we're going to be talking, if you're familiar with Bree goes by the Hood Witch, and Bree is going to be talking to us about blood sex magic, which is the topic of a really popular book of Bree's. So we are really excited to talk with Bree in the second half of the episode. But, you know, I was just, we'd like to get caught up with you. And also I'm like getting so freaking excited for MiniCon. So excited. I was just working on my class yesterday, and it's coming together really nicely.
I wish I could say that my class was like all done and ready and prepared, but it's not.
Oh no, let's be clear.
It will be.
It is not all done.
And it will be fantastic. I'm very excited.
I'm less nervous because last year I was super nervous for some reason that like I just was not going to have enough content and it wasn't going to last long enough. And I ended up like having to cut like a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. I'm the same way. Every single time I do a class, I think, oh my God, I don't have enough. I'm going to end in like 20 minutes. And then I'm like, shit, I have to cut a whole bunch out because I don't have enough time every time. So yep. I'm really excited. I'm excited because, you know, like I think that for creatives, when you're, especially if you're like creative in an entrepreneurial way, like astrology is really key, right? It's like knowing, because, you know, I was talking to my friend Sipa the other day, who's an amazing astrologer. She does a lot of work with entrepreneurs and she's also a creative and artist, opera singer, or doesn't sing as much anymore, but we grew up singing opera together. And we were just talking about how it's like, how astrology is like, it's like you get to get insight so you can choose accordingly. It's not like, well, this is not the best day to sign a contract, so I can't physically sign a contract that day. It's knowing like, hey, this is a day that might be tough for agreement. So what kind of magic can I do to buffer? Or just like when we had our friend Lisa Jade on talking about Mercury and retrograde magic, like it's not about just saying, well, Mercury's in retrograde, so I guess shit's just going to be disaster for a while. It's like, what can we do magically to make it easier for ourselves and offer to Mercury to make it, make our lives easier during these difficult astrological settings? So I'm really excited to give people that insight because I think, I mean, I grew up, right, like reading the horoscope and thinking, okay, well, that's what it is. Like, so it says I'm going to, you know, be unlucky in love this week. Guess I won't go on that date. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I just assume that like your fate was written in the sand, you know, that you can do anything about it. But then you become a witch and you realize.
It's just another tool. It's another resource that you can utilize just to kind of help you, you know, be successful, achieve what you want to achieve, manifest what you want to manifest. And well, so, yeah, I'm really excited. I think it's going to be fun because I think we also have a lot of different ways to look at utilizing astrology and different ways of using it as a resource.
Are so different, you know, I think it's going to be great. And the other thing too, is like, you're right. It is a tool. It's like, I mean, it's just like, you know, if you're going to go on a road trip, what am I going to do? I'm going to look at the weather. Like, do I need to bring chains? Do I need to, you know, do I need to plan a different route if there's going to be road construction on that road? Like, we plan to map things out all the time. Astrology is very similar. You know, you're finding out the information and you're using it to your advantage. You're figuring out if it's possible, like, to, you know, sign a contract the day after because it's better. Great. But sometimes that's not it. You know, you're not going to turn down a job offer because you have to sign the contract on a day that isn't the most auspicious day, you know?
So, no, not at all. No, absolutely. It's a tool. It's a tool and it's a resource. It's not the end all be all.
Also, I saw our friend Rosha Creon say that they are going to be visiting in May. And I was just saying how excited I am. So I hope they listen to this episode and they get really excited because their birthday is very close to my birthday. And that means we have to have birthday shenanigans and there better be some enchanted forest. I'm just saying it has to happen. And you're going to go because it's my birthday and you're not going to shit on my birthday dreams.
I know. I know at some point you guys are all going to drag me to Enchanted Forest. I've accepted this. Right. I know it will happen. I will postpone it as long as I can, but I do realize that isn't inevitable.
If you go on someone's birthday, it doesn't feel as bad because if you're like not really into it, at least you're into their birthday. It's like, okay. It's like when you go to a birthday party when you're a kid, you're like, I don't really like this pizza place as much, but you're like pumped because it's pizza and your friend's birthday. You know, it's like
exactly.
So it's exactly. Like the Enchanted Forest.
I'm always
like
down. Silly, everyone knows I'm always down for shenanigans.
All right, exactly. And that's the thing. The thing I love about the Enchanted Forest is it's like you get to be a kid and it's okay. You know, like it's okay to be like an adult that's acting like a child. I love these moments. I was just doing some spring cleaning today. Speaking of witchcraft, I was doing some spring cleaning and like really like, cause like I have like my main altar and then I have a bunch of small altars around the house and my non-main altar and even my main altar at the moment, because I haven't been feeling well, has collected a lot of dust and is like looking a little sad. So I like just decided one by one. So I took one space that really is less of an altar, but has some like items that are really important to me and some stones and crystals that I really love. This less of like an intention altar, but like more of like, you know, displaying some of the things that I think bring energy into the house that I like. And I just like cleaned it all off and reorganized it all. And now I like look, I was just looking over there and I was like, oh, I love it. It like looks so good. You know, it like before I'd look over and I'd be like, oh, looks like a dust and a mess. You know, this is the time of year that I really love, being able to, you know, just kind of go through some of that spring cleaning process. And it's a good time to like, for me, it's a good reminder to like, hey, especially with magical tools, because I'm a magical tool hoarder. Like, I'm like, okay, time to revisit. How much do I love all of these things? Do I need every one of these crystals? Sometimes when I relook at the crystals and I cleanse their energy and stuff, I realize, actually, I feel like this needs to go to someone else. And then I gift it to someone else. Or, I'm on a bunch, you know, like what, like, you know, a lot of these items, like, sometimes it's easy to get a like too many things and then it gets really cluttered. And then I feel like my altar becomes a place that I don't want to visit instead of a place that I do want to visit.
I am very excited because I am almost done with the inside construction of my house. Yes.
Oh my God, that's
so good. Dealing with
this. It feels so good.
2 months later. So my room has looked like a yard sale is trying to happen inside of it because my office had the most contents in it of any room in this house. And all of those contents had to be moved elsewhere. And probably 75% of them have been in my room. So I can't like walk around my bed. I can't easily open my closet doors. It gives me so much anxiety. And so I am so looking forward to this almost being over. And my objective is to have my office done and all of the contents back up and in the office so that I can be in there for the mini con. And I can be comfortable and I can have a good space and great energy. And so once that happens, I know that that is going to make a huge impact on just the mental clutter in my head.
Yeah, for sure.
And just the clutter in this house.
Like,
and I'm going to give, once it's done, I want to have a really good cleansing and just a really thorough, just kind of spring cleaning. And I am just so here for it. I cannot wait.
Yeah, it always feels so good. Because I hadn't been feeling well, like, you know, just clutter had built up. Like, it wasn't necessarily dirty as much as just like stuff, right? Cause I like don't like things dirty. So like that's usually fine. But when I don't feel well, it's like, you know, there's clutter. Things don't get put away. There's boxes of things that need to be, you know, like deliver, you know, stuff that I've ordered that needs to be like reorganized on shelves, you know, whatever. And then it like always feels so good because it's like right now I spent like what, 20 minutes, like polishing my, like I have this really beautiful wood cabinet, polishing the cabinet, taking everything off of it, dusting everything, putting it back on, potting a new plant, putting it on there. And like, when I look over there, I'm like, oh my gosh, I like want to look at this space. And that's how I feel about my altar, right? When I can like take the time to like, even if it's like, I know we all get busy and sometimes it's crazy, but like, you know, when the altar starts to be neglected, it usually means that your practice in yourself starts to be neglected. So it's like always a good reminder to be like, you know, so yeah, I'm excited for some of the spring cleaning. It always is like so nice to be able to get stuff looking fresh and feeling good. It lifts the energy of a space significantly.
One of the interesting things that happened because I had to move everything out of my office and all my witchy stuff out is some of that witchy stuff has now found homes throughout my house that I actually am probably going to leave them there because I just kind of enjoy seeing them there and having those reminders. So for example, I have a Brigid statue and I have a Persephone statue and Brigid moved down to the living room. And I see her every time I look over from the living room into the dining room or the kitchen. And I love her there. I just like that is her new home. That's her spot. And she's, you know, protecting the house. And that's where she is and looking over everything and watching everybody. And Persephone moved to my dresser. So she's been on my dresser and she's next to all my smelly goods and my perfumes and this little jewelry thing I have. And she is just like, that is her place. And she will not get moved back into the other room. And I'm going to kind of put some more stuff. Not shocking. Both of them have little cauldrons and things next to them and candles next to them. And so it's kind of funny. It created little altars kind of throughout my house, just in trying to find places for these things. And I just,
I enjoy them so much that, like I said, they're going to stay. Because I enjoy looking over and seeing Persephone because she's just like, told ya.
Well, that's also a good point. Like sometimes it's like I've like been thinking about like, so my main altar is in my room, like in, well, my room is kind of big. It's like in a kind of alcove section side of my room. And part of that is because, you know, it's really personal. It also has stuff on it that I like really like, you know, there's some bones, like bones on there or like horn on there that I don't, I have a carved horn. I have some carved horn pieces on there and I just like, I don't want, it's like, that's inviting the dogs, right? Like, it's like, here, do you want a bone? Because that's basically what it is. So like, but I've also like thought about busting up some of those altars and putting them in different places in my house, because I feel like sometimes I just, it's like where I go to bed. I don't spend that much time in my bedroom. Right. So I really like the idea. I'm going to like redo my, one of my altars out here and have it be a little more centralized. So like some of the daily, like, so some of the stuff where I'm lighting stuff all day can be here, and then maybe have, you know, whatever my other altar upstairs, but you know, or maybe, yeah, it's my been ancestral really altar fun.
I like, here. Like I said, I like seeing it kind of just in little spots, and I'm, you know, we've got lots of neighbors that come over and neighbor kids, and my kids, yeah, have play dates and they have sleepovers. And so I've, you know, I really had everything kind of centralized to my office, and it literally just looks, yeah, like a witch's store is what it looks like. I mean, it's got everything. Well, totally. You could possibly,
I've seen,
want,
your office. It's true.
I love, like, it so, dang, much.
So I know. Good.
It's pretty awesome. So it's, I really love that, awesome, because it's private. I don't have to worry about who sees what. I have everything readily accessible. It's really nice. But like I said, I have kind of found things that, and not wanting to just necessarily tuck them away in a box while I was waiting, I have found kind of little homes for things that are not necessarily discreet, but they're not something that's going to draw attention to itself. No one's going to, you know, freak out if they see these things or get wigged out.
Right.
And so it's just, it's nice. It's nicer to be kind of, have some of these things out and about, be surrounded by them. And like I said, not everything is going to work its way back into the office. A lot of things are going to kind of stay where they've landed. And, but yeah, that's my objective. My objective is when you see me at MiniCon, I will be in my office. I'll have my fun backgrounds because I'll have things back up on my walls. Everything will be put back, or most things will be put back together, if not everything, which will mean that my room no longer looks like a yard sale, and I will be very, very excited. Amazing. I have my special mug that I bought like 3 months ago just for MiniCon. So yeah, I'm really excited. I bought a special mug, coffee mug.
Oh, nice.
For me to be drinking. I have no idea what I'm going to wear, what I'm going to do, what my workshop is going to be.
I have not thought through any of the, what I'm going to wear. Like, I, you know, like, it's funny whenever I have events, I mean, it's even true for like, except for like, Grammys or stuff where I like legitimately have to plan, like I have to plan ahead of time because there's no choice. Otherwise, if I'm not going out to buy or rent something to wear, I'm probably choosing 20 minutes before, like that morning. Like I'll be like maybe the night before if I'm like, you know, I should probably make sure that I don't need to do laundry. Like I just like, I like, I always forget about that part. I mean, like when I was performing in LA, all of my show outfits I packed. And then I got there and I was like, what? I didn't even think about what I would need to wear before slash after the show on show day. Like, because I'm going to be seeing people and going out to food and whatever. Like, I probably want something.
That 100% sounds like something I would do.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I had all that. I was like, yes. And this makeup and this prop piece and this outfit and this jewelry all set for the show. And then I also have, I have a packing problem. And part of it is because I like have all the best intentions of packing way ahead of time. And I start packing ahead of time, but then I still somehow the day before late at night, I'm like, oh my God, all of these things that I haven't thought about. And so I'm like running around the house like a crazy person. And somehow I always pack like 75 days worth of underwear for a 3-day trip and no socks. I don't know why I do this every time. I'm like, bring socks, bring. And then I get there and I'm like, well, I guess I have to buy new socks then. Because I can't, or I'll forget my toothbrush and then I have to go to Walgreens. I have like a toothbrush in every bag because I'm like, one bag will remember to bring a toothbrush. It's just like, because I go to brush my teeth because I use an electric toothbrush. So I go to brush my teeth thinking, you know, it's going to be all good. And then I like end up being like, oh, wait a minute. I left my toothbrush drying and it's not in my bag. And then I get somewhere and I have to go find a Walgreens or some other, you know, corner store or whatever, bodega to get a stupid toothbrush. I always forget something. Always.
That sounds like me. Most of the time when I forget something, if I forget something, it's pajamas. I don't wear pajamas.
I also get pajamas or socks. Never underwear because I'm paranoid. I'm like, what if I always need extra underwear? We all know, you know, but it's always like something random. And then I'm just like, why? Why can't I just remember to take this one thing? Like I always triple check.
It's always pajamas because I don't wear pajamas.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I'm usually like in like a pair of underwear and a t-shirt or like maybe just a t-shirt or maybe no clothes at all.
Well, the funny part is whenever my kids know I'm going out of town, they will remind me about pajamas. Like that's how much they know. They will always remind me that they're like, you have to bring pajamas. Cause they're like, who are you going with? And I'll tell them, you have to bring pajamas. And I'm like, oh crap. I forgot to pack pajamas. Every time it's my children usually who remind me that I need to pack pajamas.
Your children
it's
are like, absolutely don't
hilarious.
Embarrass yourself. Or us.
You're like, seriously? Like, we understand that we're already ruined, but don't ruin the rest of the world.
Yeah, please do everybody else a favor and bring some fucking pajamas.
That's what we do. But yeah, I'm really excited. I'm just excited for spring. I'm sweating balls in my room right now. I'm not having this because my door is closed. I can't have my window open. And it was a couple nights ago because Oregon just had a beautiful weekend. We were in the mid to high
70s. It was like 80 degrees yesterday.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was wonderful.
Beautiful.
And so I laid down for bed and I was like, I threw my covers on because I have tons of covers. And I was like, oh no, that can't happen. And I threw my covers off and I'm like, oh my, am I hot? Is it hot in here? What? And I went down and I looked at the thermostat and it said it was 75 in my house. And I was like, holy crap. And so I had to go down and, you know, walk into the garage and fish out fans and then open the kids' bedrooms and put fans in their windows to cool down their rooms and didn't have a fan for my room, but that's okay. I just opened the window and try and strategically place the curtain so that no one can tell that I'm laying naked in bed because at that point it was too hot to put covers over me. But it was beautiful. And so right now it's the same thing. It's probably 73, 74 in my house right now. And I'm just sweating balls sitting on my bed recording this right now.
It's like 71, I think, in here. And it's like, it's this. So this is the time when my heating and cooling is like, it's not correct because it's like when it's hot, it's just going to be cooling all the time. When it's cold, it's just going to be heating all the time. But we're in this like in between where if the heat's not on at night, it gets too cold. But if it's not, maybe not last night, but generally speaking, it's going to get too cold. And then, but if yesterday I had to turn the AC on because it got so hot in my attic because like, you know, my bedroom, my primary bedroom is in an attic. So it's like, gets hot as fuck. It's like 60 degrees outside. And it's like 90 upstairs, you know? So I was like,
We have the bedrooms are all upstairs. So even if it's nice and crisp and cool, kind of in the main area, up in the bedrooms, it's always at least 10 to 15 degrees hotter. So
yep. Easy,
yeah, it's the same. But yeah, no, it's been beautiful weather. Like I said, it really kind of, I think, kicked in that spring vibes. I think it's another fall spring that Oregon gets because we're
for
supposed
sure
to be in the 50s again.
Everyone was like, oh my God,
raining in
50s
again. But at least for now, it gave me spring hopeful vibes and summer vibes.
But also,
and I'm excited.
We don't want no rain starting in March. That's bad. You know, like what we want is intermittent rain with sun in between. Like that's perfect. Like occasional rain days and Sundays. This is the time where I'm like, I don't mind a little bit of rain because it's good. We keep the plants looking nice. Everything grows. Earth is happy. But like, yeah, it gets intense when it's just all rain or no rain.
For those of you who have not bought your MiniCon tickets yet, it is not too late. You want to go to thatwitchlife.com. You can click on the link, get your MiniCon tickets. We have amazing raffle prizes. You can get your raffle tickets there as well. We've had there's also an opportunity to donate to the scholarship fund so that we can offer scholarships to people. Definitely check it out. We're going to have an amazing time. In the meantime, I think it's time for a word from our sponsors.
Yes. Thanks, y'all. We cannot tell you how many witches have gotten hooked on Jasmine Pearl tea.
Well, it's friggin' delicious.
And you Jasmine Pearl fans, they have a whole array of absolutely phenomenal winter teas to keep you warm and comforted through these next few cold and miserable months.
Like their Golden Fire tea, every sip of that tea is an adventure. The turmeric brings warmth and grounding that combines with a zesty kick of ginger and cayenne to create a glow of flavors that dance on your tongue. More than just the taste, Golden Fire heals you from within. It's perfect for those wintry days when you need a bit of warmth, and you can even try it as a latte.
And let's talk wellness. This tea isn't just a delight to the senses, it's a guardian for your well-being, especially during cold and flu season. It feels like a nurturing shield, fortifying and protecting.
A tea that has become a personal favorite of mine, especially during these challenging times, is the Well-Being Blend. It's not just any tea. It's like a comforting friend, offering support when you need it most. Imagine a blend of elderberries, echinacea, red clover, and rose hips. Each sip feels like it's boosting your immune system. Perfect for those days when you feel a bit off or have been around others or under the weather yourself. And the peppermint in this tea, it's incredibly refreshing, especially if you're feeling stuffed up.
Hold on, let me bring you a sip of serenity. A moment of tranquility, will we? Courtesy of Jasmine Pearl's exquisite Tranquility Green Tea. Close your eyes and envision lush Chinese tea gardens where each leaf whispers the secrets of centuries-old traditions. This isn't just a tea. It's an invitation to embark on a journey of peace and harmony. Breathe in the essence of this carefully cultivated leaf. A sip can take you on a sensory journey that transports you to a place of calm, where time slows down and every moment is savored. Disclaimer, Tranquility Green Tea experiences may include a heightened sense of inner calm, a peaceful disposition, and a newfound appreciation for the artistry of Chinese green tea.
Supporting small businesses are very important to us, and the Jasmine Pearl is a family-owned tea importer and specialty tea blender, which is based in Portland, Oregon, and they have been crafting tea blends for 17 years and direct sourcing teas from origin since 2004. Their blending and sourcing philosophy is based in the love of fine teas and herbs, which is why they focus on blending with exceptional ingredients, hand blending each batch using mainly organic ingredients, and wow, does it show.
Check out these phenomenal teas at thejasminepearl.com. Save 10% with the new coupon code WITCH2024. That's WITCH2024. Free shipping on orders over $35. Make sure you let them know you heard about them on That Witch Life podcast. And thank you to Jasmine Pearl for being an episode sponsor.
We are so excited about our new sponsor partnership with Luna & Company Soapery. Luna & Co. is an enchanting soapery with the purpose of elevating your magic through the art of self-care. As witches, this husband and wife team that are behind Luna & Co. Soapery have passionately handcrafted natural soaps and ritual oils with intention. I have not only used them myself, but I have also personally gifted many of their soaps and body oils, and I cannot get enough of them.
They are fantastic. We have included them in our subscription boxes, and I personally have been using their Brigid soap in some of my cleansing rituals. They have all kinds of handcrafted natural soaps that are really great for your skin, but they are truly magical. And so it's a really wonderful way to incorporate magic into your everyday self-care routine.
Agree. I use the Hecate soap, and it is absolutely lush. It is so good. Their meticulously crafted planetary and goddess collections are more than just soaps. They are sacred creations, ritually consecrated with the profound intention of helping you channel the unique energies of planets and goddesses in your spell work, rituals, and manifestations.
That is so true. And whether you're just taking a quick shower or a leisurely bath, Luna & Co. Soapery creates a potent tool for personal transformation and spiritual growth. You can elevate your magic and amplify your manifestations with Luna & Co. Soapery. I can personally say I love their Luna and Persephone soaps. They are my favorites.
You can find Luna & Co. Soapery on Instagram at Luna Co. Soap and at their website at lunacosoap.com. Luna & Co. Soapery ships domestically, but they also ship internationally,
yes.
Friends. So for international shipping, please contact them directly prior to purchasing. And everybody can get 15% off your order when you use code LUNAWITCH15. That's LUNAWITCH15.
Thank you so much to Luna and Co. Soapery for being an episode sponsor. Well, we are super, super excited to welcome Bree Luna, the Hood Witch, to the show. I've been a longtime follower of yours, and I'm really, really excited to be interviewing you. For those of you not familiar with Bree, Bree Luna is the founder of the Hood Witch and is dedicated to empowering, educating, and cultivating community through meaningful rituals, supporting self-care, and wellness. Luna is devoted to offering everyday magic for the modern mystic through her art and advocates for the use of traditional healing practices to address modern day challenges. She and her work have been featured internationally and in major publications, including Vogue, ID, Playboy, and the New York Times. We are super, super excited to be talking to you. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Hello.
So I don't know if you've listened to the podcast before, but this is a question we ask everyone that they come on. How did you first know that you were a witch or a magical person?
Well, I believe that I've always known that I was a witch or even just magically inclined, mostly because of my love and fascination with the unknown and with magic throughout just every realm and cultures. And also, I kind of joked about this, but growing up as a very psychically sensitive child, I didn't really know what to call it when I was a little girl, but I now, you know, it's funny because I refer to it as death energy. So like I can go into a room and if I feel it, I'm like, there's death energy in here. And like, I know that there are like spirits or the presence of, spirits. So just growing up really, focusing on my own psychic abilities and mediumship. So yeah, I mean, I guess since as early as I can remember, maybe like 8 years old.
Yeah, I think that's so common. You know, I think when we're young, a lot of us experience these things. And unless we have parents or friends or close ones that practice or can talk to us about, you know, the fact that we know that there's dead people in the room or like that we feel spirits or that we see or hear different things, like we're kind of just like, I don't know. Like there's no, and it's interesting because there's not necessarily like it's when it first comes on, you're just like, oh, is this what normal people experience? Like, I didn't know that other people didn't experience this stuff when I was a kid until like someone was like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? Like, so I think so many of us have that journey. Was there like a point where you kind of, was there like an aha moment where it kind of connected with you and you suddenly went, oh, that thing I've been, these things I've experienced, like which is the name, like that's the right term.
Well, I think that it's interesting because both of my grandmothers are, you know, would be considered witches. Brujas are healers or conjure workers, you know, people have all of these names. But for me, I like growing up just thought they were really like old fashioned. And it wasn't something that was talked about in the same way that I like how I express it. So it's always been in my blood and in my family. And there were just things that I saw where I didn't know at the time to put a name to. And so I do think that a lot of my spiritual journey and my magic and healing practice and work, I am the first woman in my family who has openly and very proudly, you know, paved this magical type of way, like, you know, coming out of it and just saying like, I don't give a fuck. Like, this is what I do. These are my practices. I'm not hiding anything. And I think a lot of times, especially coming from a background of being Black and Mexican, there is so much stigma surrounding the unseen, right? Like in magic and brujeria and like being a witch or a practitioner of things that are outside of Christianity. So there is some stigma towards that, right? Where we know,
absolutely,
we know that they're doing like witchy things. So I guess that's kind of how what I'm saying, where like I'm more open and I am really the first woman in my family to be very open and unapologetic about my practices. Whereas like my grandmothers and my mom and my aunt, like, you know, they had to be more veiling things under religion.
Yeah, we often say that like some of the most powerful magic comes out of the back of churches, because like they don't necessarily wouldn't call themselves witches, but they are practicing magic. It's just that the stigma, like my grandmother was definitely like was an intuitive, would like know things were going to happen before they were going to happen. She would never call herself a psychic or never refer to herself as a witch. Same with my mom, like would never have used that word because of the stigma. No.
And there is a lot of stigma around that. And I think it's also frightening because of what comes with that label. And I think that for me, and especially being like a child and knowing that I was different and knowing that other people weren't like me. But what I love, and I look back on this as a little girl, I rallied around my girlfriends and I was like, we're going to do witchcraft. Like I was the one, I was always like that little ringleader of like, we're doing spells. Like there's a boy that I like.
That's
like
awesome. Let's come
here. And I remember like getting my girlfriend.
That's so cute.
Yeah, we were like really in on getting this boy. His name was Joey. Hi, Joey.
Joey, if you're listening, I was casting spells on you.
Yeah, I cut your hair to put a spell on you. That was my first
That's
love spell.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, I think that like, you know, I think it's true. And I think, you know, it is, I mean, even still, you know, we have listeners that live in areas of the world that it is not safe to admit what you're doing, you know, still. And I think especially for already marginalized communities that are already have a lens over them, like it's even harder to be able to say, to be able to say that because there are already stigmas, you know? So it's like, I think it's particularly challenging when you're already in a minority community that has, you know, people already judging, and then to feel like you have to, you know, it's like, there's already people ready to jump on you, you know? So it's like, it's hard. I think particularly for people who are already, you know, already have it hard in the world in general, you know?
It's even more like sad, you know, when you have these gifts and you are like really just trying to be yourself and tap in and understand the world and understand people and understand yourself and to even have your own community. I can't tell you, I can count, I mean, hundreds of times that growing up I was called a Satanist or the devil girl. Or, you know, all of those things. And I think a lot of that also stemmed from my love of art and music. And I wasn't put into a bubble of you only listen to rap or you only listen to hip hop. You only listen to R&B. It's like I loved all of those things. But when you grow up in an environment where I went to school with predominantly Black and Mexican kids and they were just like, she's fucking demonic. Like she's weird. Like,
what are you doing?
Right.
But now it's cool because when we think about it, when we see like social media, where like now everyone likes everything and like everything's sort of like merged and there isn't really like, you have to be, I was thinking about this today. I'm like, you have to be really extreme for people to think that you're like weird now, because I think that even being weird is like normal. Right? Like,
yeah, I totally agree. I feel like has shifted. Yeah. It's like, I mean, I feel like when I do like experimental performance art and experimental opera and like ritual performance art. And it's like, when I first started doing that shit, everyone was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, what is actually wrong with you? You're crazy. Like, what the fuck? You know, demonic shit is this? Are you part of a cult? Yes. You know what I mean? And then like now people are like, oh, you're doing what? I want to come. Like people, my dad tells his friends about the podcast. And like, I sing opera, but I also sing opera while suspended from hooks, like hook suspension. And so
I love it.
So my dad literally tells his friends about this now. And I'm like, what? Because like when I was growing up, it was like, hell no. Everyone would have thought I was part of some weird cult or something, you know? So it's like, it is, I feel like things have gotten a lot more open. And I think because witchcraft has gained some popularity and visibility in pop culture, you know, it has allowed people who've been practicing for a long time to feel more and more comfortable being out as a witch, you know?
And I think it comes in waves too, because, one of my favorite things, I love witchcraft and I love Satanism from the 60s. And I love just like revisiting like the 60s and 70s like era of magic and occultism, and like it's so exciting because to me reading these stories, like recently I was reading a book by Louise Huebner and I love her. She's like one of my favorite witches. She got the title of being called the official witch of Los Angeles. And she's just such a riot. Like my favorite witchcraft books are from the 60s because they didn't give a shit. Like they would like slander and trash each other and publication. And it's like, it's so good where you're like, oh my God, like we need to like, you know, I could see that happening. Like, I don't know if it could happen now, but I'm like there because everyone tries to be like, I'm above it. I'm not going to give them the satisfaction, but they love talking shit in their books. Like in the 60s, they're so good. So I'm like, I love this wave of like how there are some people who get mad where they're like, witchcraft is trendy now. And I'm like, well, you really need to like go back into your history because witchcraft is always going to be trendy. It's sexy. Everyone loves magic. Everyone loves witches. Everyone loves like paranormal things. So I'm like, it's always going to be
fascinated with weird stuff. They're fascinated. It's always going to
be popular.
And like, it's funny too, because I'm like, when they're like, it's just popular. I'm like, so is every, like what? Like, so Christianity isn't popular. I mean, like every, like, what does that even mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just getting, and like, yes, it's become trendy, but like to me, and it's funny because I've had this conversation with some witches where some witches are not, they're like, I don't like it. There's like selling, you know, selling little witch kits at the, you know, at like whatever little kitschy store. And I'm like, okay. But like, to me, I'm like, it doesn't really bother me because it allows me to be openly talking about the things I do. For me, I actually, I think it allows us to practice more authentically because it's like, we don't have to worry about like, it's destigmatized a lot of the practice. It's like, people are like, oh, you're a witch. That's cool. Not like, ew, what? Do you eat babies? Like what? I mean, like what? Yeah. I mean, the, you know, the insanity that people would believe before, I think.
I don't eat them. I bathe in their blood. No, I'm
kidding. Yeah. And you're like, I only rub their blood on my skin for skincare. It's fine.
Virgin.
but you're totally right. You're totally right. I think that, you know, things getting popular. I mean, I know it can be obnoxious when you see something that you've studied and put a lot of effort into being, you know, popularized. But at the same time, I don't know. To me, I think it feels, I don't know, pretty good to be able to feel like you can talk openly about it not everywhere for sure in the world. Absolutely. But at least in, you know, most of the areas that I've been in, I haven't had a problem talking about my witchcraft or having people think it's weird.
It's important to remember as well. And again, everyone's like, it's popular and it's trendy. And it's like, well, again, we see things go in waves. So we did have this cycle of witchcraft, the 60s, occult, 70s, psychedelics and plant medicine and hallucinogenics and Eastern philosophy and witchcraft. It's not new. Like astrology was a huge thing in the 70s. Like my mom, you know, and my aunts are always into like astrology and things like that. So it's not new. And we think of like the 80s with like new age spirituality. And then the 90s, we're going into like pagan and modern paganism, you know? So it's like, there's nothing really new. I think that we all need to sort of remind ourselves, these are very much ancient practices that we should all be really happy that we're coming back to, and especially getting out of outdated, like patriarchal ways of belief and caring about nature and caring about humans and nature. And, you know, like all of these things are like, they're not bad. So I do think that, yes, for me, seeing Starbucks like steal from my brand, like that was weird. But I think that more importantly, it's exciting, you know, to have community and to have a space where you can teach each other and teach like younger generations so that there isn't so much stigma around alternative, I guess you'd say, healing practices and spirituality and beliefs and things like that. So,
absolutely. And I think there's commonality in so many different things as far as different, you know, all sorts of different religions, right? That kind of share certain common magical practices, you know, back through their histories, which I find so interesting. That I was actually watching something. It was a show called The Real Amish Witches.
And it was about that. They had baby Lilith.
Did you watch it? Did you love it?
Yes. I loved it.
Oh my gosh. So what I loved was, is they're talking about their practice and it's called Bruja. That's what they call it. And what was so funny to me is they talk about the touching and the healing. And I just kind of laughed to myself because I'm like, this is Reiki.
Why have I never heard of this?
Why have you never?
It's just so funny to me that there's certain things that it's like different cultures and different beliefs and different magical practices. And even ones that they don't consider it a magical practice, right? They have these, but it's like, it's the same thing, right? Like you can name it 100 different names, but they're doing the same thing. And it's
when we think about nature spirits, there are tribes in Africa. And then I look at Romanian witches and I look at like just pagans throughout like Europe and having these beautiful like rituals and costumes. And you go to Africa and you see so many similarities in even the outfits, even the like the decadence and like, and it's like, wow, this is not just about like race or no, this is ancient. Like this is spirit. This is like spirit that is moving. It transcends time and space and race and things. But to kind of go back to what we were saying, what I love so much is that we're now also seeing so many people returning back to their ancestral lineage.
Yeah, and they're learning.
Yes.
And I love feeling it. Empowered to connect with their ancestors on that level, which is huge, you know?
I love it. Because I'm like, there, you know, we watched this before and I was saying like, you know, in the 80s, there was that like new age and there was a lot of appropriation from like, I'm going to get like a Native American and I'm going to mix it with like
it
yoga.
It was so bad. And it still is bad sometimes.
Yeah. And
honest,
it's like, there's, we see like all of this, like, again, like appropriation. But what I love now is that, you know, this like much younger generation of like baby witches and people who have an interest in like witchcraft, they're interested in their like culture and their sense of like tradition and knowing, you know, like their ancestral and like decolonized sense of magic. So a lot of my friends who are Taino and like different tribes, and if we're going into hoodoo and we go into Celtic magic, it's like, and Romani magic, it's like I love seeing people returning back to their ancestors and ancient forms of practice.
It's really true. It's really powerful. You know, it connects us to, to like, you know, what the people that, how we are here because of these people, and like, it connects us to their practices. And so it's deeper than just doing the thing. It's also learning about who we are on like such a deep level, you know? And I think that's like a really powerful, and ancestral magic is so powerful because, you know, it's like, it's such a powerful tool to connect with and venerate ancestors, to like use that form of magic and like lean on our ancestors for guidance and help in our own magic and honor them for the help that they give us. It's huge. I have a question about your book, Blood, Sex, Magic, which is amazing. What inspired you to write this book?
So interestingly enough, with Blood, Sex, Magic, I had always wanted to write a book and I really didn't know where to begin. Interesting. Like when I thought of what I wanted, it wasn't so much just going to be like a boring, like I'm going to write a witch book. It was more like I wanted to put together a collection of memories and I knew I wanted it to be very visually heavy. Because a huge part of the Hood Witch, for those who maybe are not familiar, I've always loved contemporary art and collage art. I like to call this spirit collaging. So I've always wanted to have something like that because I love symbolism. And so for me, like photos and images and symbols spoke more to me in the stories that I was going to tell. So I wanted to really make sure that I had a very visual heavy, very rich book that I had full creative control over. And yeah. I think that a lot of publishers who approached me in writing a book, they didn't understand what my vision was. And so when I was approached by someone from Harper to do this book, the first thing I said to them, I was like, if I'm doing a book, it needs to look like this. And I've already had it sketched of like what I wanted it to be. And so I was like, this is what I want it to look like. Like I want it to be this like modern grimoire with like images, like very symbolic, very like how much, like very much like how my brain works and how it looks inside. It's like always like flashes of image and color mm-hmm. and animals and just things. Like that's just to me, like that's how my mind works. And so I really wanted something very full color and visual heavy, along with the stories, along with memories. So it wasn't a linear story. It was bits and pieces of my journals and parts of my life. And it's a poem or it's a thought. So I really wanted to create this non-linear type of book. And that's sort of where it happened. And I pieced together a lot from my journals and dreams and life. And there's just so many things that kind of went into it. So I started working on Blood, Sex, Magic during the pandemic. And it took me like almost 3 years to complete. And that was really hard, you know, during the beginning of the lockdown until publishing.
It was a hard, you know, like I think when the lockdown first happened, as a creative, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have like all this time to like do things. But it was such an intense experience and it was scary and so unknown. And it, you know, I did get to work on some projects, but it definitely was not the like easy breezy experience that I initially thought having all this time would give me, you know? You know, in the book, so when we look at like Blood, Sex, Magic, what do these elements mean to your practice? Are they literal aspects? Are they symbolic or both?
So it's funny because I wanted blood to be literal, and that was too much of a liability. It was too much of a liability for the publishers. Just kidding. Well, slightly kidding, but not really. I wanted to include elements of blood magic into the book, but that was something that was I think that you know this because I think you said you did suspension. So it's like working with elements of magic.
Yeah, I use blood and rituals.
Blood. Yes. So it's like blood. It's like what level do you want to be responsible for what you're putting into the world and kind of giving
free? Totally.
And to me, blood feels like an initiation. Like you don't get to have that part of my magical practice. So blood then turned into a symbolic meaning of ancestral lineage and your blood, where you come from, how you connect back to ancestors, how you connect to yourself. So we broke it off into I broke it down into blood, sex, magic. And that was also a fun play on words because I was like crying one day laughing to my editor and I was like, what more do you want from me? I'm putting my blood, sweat, and tears. And then we were laughing. And I was like, I should just call it blood, sex, and magic. And then I was like, oh, wait, I love that.
Oh, wait, blood, I actually really like that title. Well, and it's like, you know, I think it's nice. I mean, I agree. I mean, it's, you know, it's this hard thing, you know. I have talked about blood magic, you know, to people before, and it's this challenge because there is a lot of responsibility that has to happen around that. Not just about like what that can do magically, but how to do that safely, how to make sure you are using appropriate and sterile equipment. You're not like using some like, you know, old rusty knife to like, you know, like giving yourself tetanus or something, you know, how to make sure that you're like being responsible with your bodily fluid after you use all of these things. It's like such a big, you know, such a big process. It would be a lot to address even in an entire book about blood magic, let alone a part of a book. And I totally understand. I mean, I think that blood can be very, very, very powerful in magic. And I think it's a beautiful piece of magic, but it definitely needs to be approached in a, you know, in a smart way. And I like how you related blood to ancestry in the book, because I thought that that was a really clever way to, because that is, you know, I mean, I know that we can sometimes, you know, like there, we can sometimes pull in people that were influential to us that were not blood related, but a lot of ancestry magic is based on blood. So it's like, you know, it's like when you're leaning into that, like that's, it's a really important element of practice that I think some people overlook, you know, and I think it is certainly getting into ancestral veneration and ancestral magic has like changed my practice really significantly as a witch. So, I like the play on words there, but I like how that came about. That's cool. One of the things that I really, really loved that you said in the book is that you said every no is a spell cast to protect from unnecessary bullshit. And I was like, yes, because boundaries are so important. And we often like think that we shouldn't, that it's like bad to have them or we're like an inconvenience or whatever. And I really loved that. And why is protection so important to a perfect person's magic? And why is saying no such an important part? Oh my God, it's such an important part of protection.
Because I love being unruly and I love being a pain in the ass and I love being a thorn in the side to most who have, you know, tried to make me settle for less than I've felt that I've deserved. And I wanted to put that into the world where it's like, as women and women identifying people or anybody, it's like, you don't have to settle for the crumbs that people give you in life. And I think as witches, and when you take on the word or even calling yourself and claiming yourself to be a witch, why do you have to settle for things that are not up to par with you? And so I think every no is a spell to protect you from unnecessary bullshit. I think that that is something more people should be comfortable with saying no. And I say no more than I say yes. And a lot of times maybe that is attributed to like me being a Taurus. So I am very stubborn by nature.
I'm also a Taurus. And
I'm very stubborn by nature. And it's like, I want what I want and I want it right now. So, you know, I don't want to compromise for my life. I don't want to compromise for things in my life that I know that I'm worthy of. And I want witches and I want people to empower themselves and know like you are worthy of what you want and what you know, you don't have to settle. And so, I was laughing even with the book. I turned down more publishing companies than I even bothered saying yes to, because the way, and I think more people don't know this about me. It's like, I'm approached every day with like weird, brands or businesses that want to do like,
yeah, collab- do you want to be a, what if, I mean, it's just like a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah. It's always something where they're like, oh, do you want to do this or partner and collab? And I'm like, no.
No.
And I think a lot of times people who are like, because they're like, oh my God, this company is so big. And there's, and I'm like, I don't care. I don't like it.
Yeah,
I don't,
like, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't, like, I mean, it's the same, like, just like when we look at people relationships, the hottest, coolest looking person isn't necessarily the best relationship. You know, I really truly believe that we end up with what we're willing to settle for. Like if we're willing to settle for shit that's not good for us, that's not empowering us, that's not doing these things, and we're not like, no is such a powerful word. It stops people in their tracks, right? So
it's a complete sentence, right? No.
No.
I don't want to.
It's a one word complete sentence and it's very clear. And so it's like, and I think it's important that, you know, especially when we're, you know, intuitive and energetically sensitive individuals, like we can't just be like giving that away for free all the time, because, you know, we have to, I mean, it's exhausting. The work is exhausting. It gives a lot, but it takes a lot of energy. And I think in all aspects of life, you know, we should never be like, well, I really want this, but I guess I'll settle for this thing that's not even close to what I want. You know, like I would rather wait around working hard to get to the saying no to the not quite good enoughs to get to the things that were really important to me. And that's true in magic. You know, like when we say no and we make put ourselves in a situation where we empower ourselves to do something that's better for us, that makes us a stronger person, a more powerful person. We say no to the wrong publisher. We say no to the wrong partner. We say no, you know, to family members that aren't respecting our boundaries. We say no to, you know, like those things are like, they're a powerful part of our strength and our power and our magic.
And I think that's the part of like being a witch as well. It's like, you're not supposed to be loved and nice, but to everyone, right? It's like, you're a witch. You're embodying like having that autonomy and having that freedom.
Yes.
Like, the witch has never been this archetype where it's like, oh, I am loved by everyone. I'm an angel and I am a sweet little goddess. It's like, no, it's like, I'm going to bite your fucking head off and you need to come and approach me with offerings or come with something, right? Like, come meet me halfway or don't. Or I'm going to like just, you know, it just depends, I guess. Like, there are like witches of like love and beauty. And I think that all of those things, you don't have to choose one or the other. But I think that's what I love so much about the witch as a whole. It's that like, the witch is whatever you want to embody essentially. Right. But when I think of witch, to me, it's just like having that balance between like fierce and love and destruction and creation, right?
Yeah, we can't. I mean, like, there are times for love and light. There are times for that kind of energy, just like there are times for rage, just like there are times for chaos, just like there, you know, there are times for, you know, boundaries, all of it, you know. So it's like, I think that, you know, we do ourselves a disservice if we ignore the quote unquote less savory parts, right? Like, you know, the less palatable parts, which, you know, I mean, I think that people accept love and light really easily. And again, I think that is important. That love energy, that kind energy, that is like a really important part of the balance. But like, rage is important. It's an important part of it too, you know?
I don't really trust any spiritual practitioner that doesn't have any rage or like destructive component to them, because I'm like, if you are only about like seemingly love and peace and all chill vibes, I don't trust you. Like, yeah, I don't think that that's a real thing. Like, you're like, I feel like we're all very like multifaceted people and being able to balance those things. So I've also heard where it's like, if you can't hex, then you can't heal. So it's like, if you don't know how to do both of those things, then please leave me alone.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think it's true. Like, there's, because I don't know how you could be existing in the world today and have no anger. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's just, I'm sorry. Like, you cannot look at what happens around the world in every country, in every space in the world and not have rage. Like, and think, oh, and think that just love energy on its own is enough. Like, anger is powerful. And yes, you have to be careful with it. And that doesn't mean, you know, like anger that's like unwieldy and that we haven't thought about, that we're being irrational about, that we're just throwing out into the universe. But like, using rage and magic is very powerful. And we need to sometimes, because there are a lot of things in this world to be really fucking mad about. And if we're ignoring those by saying, no, I don't let myself. And I understand that we need to like, sometimes we need to shut it off and center ourselves, because being angry all the time, also really taxing. It's the balance. We have to be able to find all of those energies.
Not being able to properly release, right? Like anything, you need to be able to properly release. If you're not occasionally releasing frustration and anger and hurt and pain and frustration, you're not processing. You're not processing what's happening. And if you're not processing what's happening, like Bree said, you're not healing. So if you can't do that, then you can't heal, because part of the healing process is accepting, is not just necessarily accepting what's happening, but processing what's happening.
Yes,
and wading through it and feeling those feelings that come with the processing. And getting rid of those feelings in whatever way is, you know, helpful and appropriate and, you know, helps you to kind of get through. And that's absolutely right. There's no shortage of things that cause anger and rage.
Exactly. So I also think
the ability to process that is really important.
Yeah, I'm like, to go back into when we're talking about the witch's work, when we think of the witch, right? When we're thinking of witches, they're always the ones who are outcasted, and being the voice for injustice and doing the work that everyone else is scared to do. When you don't want to go to church and go to a priest or a preacher, or, you know, you're not going to these people, you're going into the woods, you're going into the forest alone, and you're holding a lantern, right? And you're going to meet with the witch. You're going to bring your offering. You're going to hear what this magical conduit between worlds and dimensions, what are they going to, you know, are they a good witch? Or are they going to be bad? It's like, it doesn't really matter. It's like, what are you going to the witch for? Because when we think historically about the concept, or even, again, the archetype of the witch, it's going back to this balance of light and darkness, right? It's going back into that realm where who is going to be that intermediary between justice and chaos, right? Like, where you can have like a court case coming up, I'm going to go to the witch. I'm going to like go to her and or go to him, and we're going to work some magic together so that this works in my favor, right? So I think that too many people, and it's so funny because when I was growing up, I'm kind of like bouncing all over the place, but when I was growing up, my mom had a really good friend, and she was Russian, and I loved her, and she told me something that stuck with me my whole life. And she looked at me and she said, too much light will make you go blind. Because it's like, you don't always have to be smiley. And she, that was the funniest thing, is she used to also say, like, too much smiling isn't good for your soul. And I was like, what is, I was a little kid, I was like, what does that mean? She's like, too much smiling isn't good for the soul. And she said that it will, like, too much light will make you go blind. And I was like, I've never heard that before, but she, you know.
I agree a thousand percent. And I think kind of like what you were talking about, as far as, you know, people will go to the witch because the witch is there for, you know, helping with injustice, helping with things like that. I think the thing that is significant in magic and witchcraft is the concept of self-empowerment. You do not have to just accept that which is happening to you. You have the ability to manifest or make change. That is not a popular philosophy in patriarchal society. I volunteered for a couple of years at a battered women's shelter, and I had to go through a training before I did it. And part of the training was they give you a card, and you're this woman and you're living her life. I went through 6 different lives. I died 5 times. And every time that the card would, because you would essentially repeat the footsteps of this woman and what she did. And I learned in these different experiences, I didn't want to go to the priest, because all the priest told me to do was to obey my husband. And maybe if I listened better, or if I helped my husband with his anger, he wouldn't hit me anymore. I learned as these women and experience the frustration when I would, my next card was, now you have to talk to the priest. I don't want to talk to the priest. You know, I'm going to want to go to a witch. I'm going to want to go to a witch who's going to say, this isn't okay. You don't have to deal with this.
We're going to kill him. Okay. That's what the witch will tell you.
Exactly. How do we get rid of the husband? You're not the problem. The husband is the problem. And that's the thing I think that's so special with magic and witchcraft. Yeah, absolutely. But it's empowerment. It's you have a right to make things different.
And I think that that scares so many women, because, and again, we've been programmed to believe that the power is outside of you and that you are not capable of doing these things. And it's like, oh, yes. And especially when you have a group of women together, or, you know, magical community, but I specifically love working with my sisters. And I think that, like, when you have a group of very powerful witches together and working together for a common cause, and especially when it comes to abuse or sexual violence or child abuse. It's like there are so many spirits and so many guides and so many ancestors and so many deities who do not play about that shit.
And do not fuck around. Yeah, exactly.
So I'm like, it's important that, and this is something that I've been really, really adamant on sharing, because I know that on social media, a lot can get muddled where people have misconceptions about you. And because I don't publicly post my altars or things I'm working on, it's like, you don't know what I actually, you know, where my moral compass lies. So I think right. It's just what you're seeing or what you get is what you get, right? But it's like,
yeah,
I am not afraid. And I think that's important. And I want to empower so many witches to know this. It's like, don't be afraid to protect yourself. And don't be afraid to really unleash and go hard. You know, when it comes to like your magic and someone like unprovoked attacking you or things like that. And, you know, we hear it a lot where people are like, oh, binding is dark magic. And this is black, dark magic and black. And I'm like, what? Like, how are you?
Is putting a security system in your home dark magic? Is wearing your seatbelt dark magic? Is, you know, making, you know, calling the police if someone's stalking you dark magic? You know what I mean? Like, it's like all that is, when I hear shit like that, it makes me so mad, because I'm like, what you're saying is I shouldn't be allowed to protect myself. What you're saying is your discomfort in me binding someone is less important, or is more important than my safety.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Then again, we don't feel bad.
But this is the thing. We go back to that moral Christianity, like if you just turn the other cheek, it's like, no, I'm going to fucking fuck you up. Like, I'm not going to, like, excuse my language, but it's like,
no, you can always swear all the time. Swear away.
Okay. Well, I didn't know. I was like, okay, I don't want to like go crazy. Like,
sorry, I should have said that. Courtney's really good at the beginning of the podcast about saying like, swearing is fine. Talking shit about the government is fine. Talking shit on assholes is fine. You know, like, yeah. So yeah, you're fine.
Yeah. So I'm just like, I'm not going to like, I just don't agree with this very Christian turn. What would Jesus do? Just turn the other. It's like, no way. Like, I am coming with a flaming sword. Like, I am coming to, I'm coming for you. So it's like, don't think that, you know, I'm not this sweet, like, little nun, you know, where it's like, no, we're not, we're witches. We're not saints. We're not, that's not what we're doing here. So
it's also a very patriarchal notion, because the turn your other cheek, that's a whole different level for female expectation as opposed to male expectation. Men are expected to protect. They're expected to, you know, do things to protect things and to get angry and take care of things. Whereas women are supposed to sit back and just hope maybe someone will take care of them. And witchcraft just blows that out of the water and says, no, you have every right to protect your damn self.
Witchcraft is like, who's doing what for you? No, do it for yourself. And like the, you know, I think too, it's like outside of, I mean, I think it's true. It's like be palatable or whatever, but it's also like, it's also this idea that like, I'm like, what, why wouldn't you use something to protect, like a tool that you have to protect yourself? Why wouldn't you, like, I mean, it's just like, we shouldn't have to just put up or shut up and deal with harm, right? Like, and deal with people who are harming us. And like, I have no, you know, it's like, you know, I'm not gonna like go out for some petty, some dumb petty reason and try and hex someone. Obviously, there's a misuse of that. There can be a misuse of that magic. There can be a misuse of literally anything. But I think the idea that hexing or baneful magic doesn't have a place in magic is a mistake. It's like, it absolutely does, because it is our job. If I have the ability to do something that might protect someone from harming lots of people or me or people I love, you bet your fucking ass I'm going to use that. Like, you know what I mean? I don't have any qualms and I won't feel bad about it.
You know, what's interesting too, is that for me, especially with owning Hood Witch and doing that for the last 10 years and being in such a like public eye, you are put at the center of scrutiny, right? Mm-hmm. Like I can count so many times of other witches and practitioners of magic that create scenarios that you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I have no idea what you've been talking about. And the amount of hate or energy that, you know, and envy, the people are like, oh, well, you're doing this. Like, I want to be doing that. So it's like, there's ego, right? When we think know this, right? With like, within magic, any type of spiritual community or any type of community, really, there's always going to be that ego of like, I want to be the best of this, or I want to be the top of that. It's like, it's been going on forever though. And that's why I was saying, when you look back to the witch and occult books of the 60s, you will read some of the funniest things, just with even like Raymond Buckland and having like Sybil Leek and Louise Huebner and like Anton LaVey. It's like all of these big, like popular, you know, witches, they really like, I mean, they like tried, like they really like let each other have it. And I'm like, there's not so many like niceties, you know, how there is now where everyone's just like, I'm gonna, you know, I don't want to give this energy or attention, but I don't know. I just really love it. And so I think, maybe my next book, I really want to do like a deep dive into the pop culture occult of, you know, certain parts of the witchiness of the 60s and 70s. I don't know.
Yeah, it's true. It's like this, you know, I it's like sometimes I think people think like protecting their peace means being peaceful. And I'm like, sometimes protecting your peace is kicking the shit, like, you know, fighting for yourself, fighting for your safety, fighting for what you need, fighting for what you deserve. You know, sometimes that's kicking the shit out of someone that's hurting you to protect yourself. Or sometimes that's, you know, doing baneful magic to make sure, I'm not saying like go out there and kick the shit out of people, but if someone's harming you, you have to protect yourself. If someone attacks me, I'm going to defend myself. You know, if someone is a danger, I'm going to use magic to defend myself. And I think that I feel like that is a different type of protecting your peace, because that's protecting your safety, which is part of your peace. So it's like, you know, and I understand.
I really loved your book. I like the tone of your book. I thought it was
so good.
Really, it was fun. It was refreshing. It was, you know, it just was very, you know, to the point and kind of unabashed. And just that's kind of, you know, what I like about things is it's like, if you want to believe something, if you want to do something, then do it. If you feel good about it and you feel right, you know, right in doing it, then you have every right to do it.
And there's so much that I feel like this is, again, for people who are not familiar with my work, like this is my first book, right? So it's like, this is just a chip of, like, this is like such a minute part of my practice. This is almost like my introduction to like, hey, this is my book. Like, this is what I'm putting into the world. And even looking back at it now, I'm like, God, there's so much more I wanted to add to this, or there's so much more that I could keep going. And yeah. I think that learning how to edit things down, or just, you know, just you have to, and that's the thing when you're working with like a major publishing company, it's like, you do have to edit yourself. There is so much, because for me, this was the most vulnerable project I've ever done. So for people who are not familiar with my work, like, I've never been at the forefront of like my brand, right? Like, I've never posted pictures of myself. I never did videos, or I never wanted to be like a persona or like a character of myself. Like, I'm the witch, and I kind of like hid behind just my post that I was putting into the world, right? And I think that this is the first time that people got to see a part of who I am. Like, I'm not just this faceless thing that puts out stuff on social media. Like, I'm a real human. I'm a real practitioner of magic. I'm a mother. I am a daughter. I'm a sister. I am sharing my experiences, and I want to show you a glimpse or like a little piece into my life and in my practice. And so that was something that was really important to me in sharing the things in my book. I wanted to ensure that I shared only rituals or spells or practices that I've done and that I do and that I like doing and that I feel safe and comfortable putting into the world for you to do, right? Like, I don't want to put something that is dangerous for people or harmful or disrespectful to other traditions or cultures. So for me, this was just my like offering, my love letter to my readers and to maybe like a young witch or someone who has a curiosity in exploring these parts of themselves or, you know, finding some inspiration from that. So it's really just my offering.
I mean, I think it was such a beautiful way to introduce like you and your approach to things. And I think it's a book, as Kanani said, that like is such a good read. It's very relatable. It's like, it's like real, but it's also, and it does not, it does, it's not, it's unabashed. It doesn't shy away, but it also is like, it's also like a really, like you read through it quickly. It's not like over academic or like, you know, it doesn't ramble. It's just very, very good. Very, very good. For those of you that have not read it, please go check it out. Blood, Sex, Magic. And what, before we wrap up, I don't want to take so much of your time, even though we love talking to you, but, what's next for you and where can people find you?
So I guess right now, interesting, I am going to be hosting a retreat in Costa Rica, which is fun. That's happening in May.
That's exciting.
Oh my God. That's so cool.
No, and that's the thing is like, I love food. I'm a Taurus. Remember, I'm ruled by Venus. I love eating. I love art and magic and, of course, sex, blood, sex, magic, and eating. So right now, I'm just really kind of enjoying my book and enjoying having some downtime and being creative just for the sake of being creative. Yeah. I wanted to work on doing my own tarot deck. So that's something that is...
I would totally, I'm so excited. I hope you do. That would be so awesome.
Yeah, that's something I want to work on. But right now I'm just taking a break and, well, not really a break, but just kind of like relaxing from writing the book and then putting it out. There's like a lot of stress around that. So right now I'm in my creative bubble, like my own realm of like, I want to be at my own pace. I want to do what I want to do. I don't want to do everything. You know, I just want to like be calm and be in a place where I can like go back to what makes me feel good and write because I want to and not because I have to.
Yeah.
So just really being in that space, I'm still offering readings, tarot readings. So I'm doing like one-on-one readings, and where people can find me, of course, on Instagram, it's at The Hood Witch. And I am my website, thehoodwitch.com, and I'm The Hood Witch everywhere. So be sure that it's the real me, because you know there's been a lot
of
like,
oh my God, there's so many assholes out there.
Yes.
So many.
We will post your links and stuff like that so people can find you, because there's so many imposters and poser accounts.
So many. It'll be in our show notes, and we'll also, you know, tag you and everything when we release the episode. Yay! So, super exciting. For those of you that aren't familiar with Bree, go check out The Hood Witch, go check out all the social medias, go pick up the book. And Bree, it's been so awesome talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on. Your insight has been really awesome and it's been a treat. And for those of you listening, thanks so much for joining us and we'll talk to you next week. Bye y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to That Witch Life podcast. Our music is by Dustin Schultz, editing by Corey Drake. If you like what we do, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts. If you want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee or check out our merch on our Etsy store or join us on Patreon for bonus content, ad-free episodes, or to join our witch squad. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For show notes, audio transcript, or to ask us a question to answer on a future episode, go to thatwitchlife.com. Until then, keep motivated. recording that shit. We will talk to you next week.
So mote it be.